Hello and welcome to Vista Talks, interesting discussions with interesting people from all around the world. My name is Simon Hodgkins, and I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Niall O'Driscoll. Niall is the Chief Executive Officer of VStream Health, the industry leaders when it comes to things like creating patient-centric virtual reality experiences. Now, with everything going on in the VR, AR world, it's an exciting time to be talking about this. And of course, we want to hear a little bit about the background and the context to what is VStream Health. So I'm going to hand straight over maybe to Niall. And Niall, could you maybe introduce yourself and tell our international audience here at Vista Talks a little bit about the journey of VStream? What is VStream Health? Because you're doing some really fascinating things in the world of content, VR, and these sort of virtual reality experiences for digital health.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, listen, first of all, thanks so much for inviting me on. It's always a pleasure to get to talk to you and catch up and explore all the different things that are happening in the world in this area. Before we got to VStream Health, I suppose I'll give you a little bit of background as to the how the company got formed. We're around 16 years. So VStream itself is around 16 years and was founded by myself and Andrew Jenkinson. And we actually know each other since the age of 9. So my background is creative. I did a degree in theater, a master's in film, and I started working in kind of the first online video platform. I started building one of those in Ireland for a music magazine called Hot Press. And Andrew's background is technical. So he did kind of computer science in DCU and then did an MBA after that. And we formed the company, and everything that we ultimately kind of started doing was a combination of our two backgrounds, the creative and the technical. YouTube was only just getting up and running. Facebook wasn't around. You know, the iPhone was just coming out. And so it was right at the birth of these things. And we were working with advertising agencies, or advertising agencies suddenly realized that they needed to do, you know, digital and what this whole new digital world was. And so we started doing a little bit of work in that area. But we quickly kind of found that, you know, what we really loved doing was using essentially design thinking to solve problems, right? So design thinking meaning that we combine our creative and technical skill sets, and we talk to anybody in any industry that has some sort of a challenge and see how we can develop something using our skill sets and the kind of the skill sets of the people that we that joined our teams. And so we started within a couple of years, I suppose, we started working in areas like Formula One. And we worked with McLaren, worked with Mercedes Formula One. We worked with Super Bowl, creating what we called ultimately human-centric experiences. So it's experiential marketing using technology. So sometimes it will be online, sometimes it will be offline, sometimes it would use new technology. So, for example, kind of one of our first it was after a number of years in business, but one of our first big projects was with McLaren Formula One and SAP. So McLaren have what they in Woking in the UK, their headquarters. And it's an amazing building. I think it's one of the most expensive privately built buildings in the world, certainly for Formula One or in the UK. And it's kind of like a James Bond villain lair. It's built, it's a circle. It's built for the to look like McLaren logo from the air. It's partially subterranean, built on the lake. The lake, this is where they build all the sports cars, all the Formula One cars. They also have 5 companies in there ultimately. But this is where they build the Formula One cars. They test the Formula One cars. And they have wind tunnels there. And all of that technology is then cooled by the lake. And when we started working, we were working for the CEO at the time, who was a renowned perfectionist. And what we did was ultimately activated McLaren's or SAP sponsorship of McLaren. So we built a center of excellence in this space. And what the center of excellence basically did was it said, look, SAP's story is all about data. It's all about data, okay? And what they wanted to do is tell the story of data, but how it applied to McLaren Formula One racing. So we said, well, where did the two meet? And they meet in basically mission control. And mission control is a room in the McLaren headquarters where no matter where the cars are racing around the world, the 250 sensors that are on each car come back to mission control. And in mission control, and all the other data as well, the weather data and everything else, and in mission control, you have a series of different types of engineers, analysts, strategists, who are all looking at this data and making decisions for when in real time for the car, whether it should pit, whether it should change tires, what, you know, all these sorts of things. And so the screens they're looking at are standard computer screens, two screens with data coming in either lines and lines of numbers or in graphs, two-dimensional graphs. So we said, how do we imagine a future version of this that really activates SAP data analytics? So we said, well, let's imagine we can visualize the data in a more interesting way, not just a 2D graph. So let's make it three-dimensional. And then let's make it more intuitive as to how you engage and interact, or an engineer interacts with that. So ultimately, we create the world's first gestural hologram. And that was where an engineer can then, the data is now visualized in three dimensions, and the engineer can go in and grab it, move it around, and turn it around. So that was the core of this center of excellence. And then we started using Google, or we started looking at augmented reality glasses, where we could activate spaces around there. At the time, we worked with Moverio glasses. We built some indoor tracking to add to the glasses. We used radar sensor to turn glass walls into touchscreen. Well, you don't have to actually touch them, because Ron Dennis, who was the CEO at the time, came down and said, are you going to clean the glass every day from all the fingerprints? And we were like, no. He says, okay, well, make sure I don't have to touch it, but I can interact with it in this way. So we put lots of different technology, different types of technologies, or cracked technologies together to ultimately create this center of excellence, which allowed people to experience what the future of data integration and interaction would be like. And from there, we started working, moving into other sports, where we started working with SAP in other areas, for example, with the 49ers and Super Bowl. And then we started working with Mercedes Formula One. So we were really very much working in those areas. And then Pfizer approached us, and they said, we want to use your skill set to tell, to communicate to healthcare professionals, to help them understand atrial fibrillation. We have congresses where all these HCPs turn up. And we want to use maybe something like virtual reality, because it's, you know, at the time new, and it's a bit of a gimmick. But we did that. So we created a little flying robot called Harv, who flew you into the heart and explained what was happening in atrial fibrillation. And that was really successful. And so they came to us again and said, okay, well, now we have rheumatoid arthritis. Can you do something for that? So we started looking at, actually, how can we use XOR technology, in particular virtual reality, in a much more patient-centric way. And we started looking at it from, first of all, embodiment. So the idea that when you put on a headset, you can see through a patient's eyes, you can experience the world through a patient's eyes. Now, that's important because it allows the patient's voice to be augmented. It allows the patient to give the patient a piece of content they can then share with their healthcare professional or their family to go, this is how I experience life, which helps build or bridge that empathy gap. So that was an important element. Then we're able to educate them. And when you're educated in virtual reality, you retain more information because more parts of your brain are activated. And that leads you to psychoeducation. Psychoeducation is the concept of, if you educate a patient on their disease, because they're more in control, because they have more information, they're more educated, it actually reduces their stress levels. And if you reduce their stress levels, you're going to have a better patient outcome. And then we were able to fly them into the body, as again, as part of the educational piece, but also for healthcare professionals, we could explain with this particular disease what's happening at a cellular level. And then we wrap all of that up into a kind of a narrative arc that at the beginning shows the challenge that a patient will have through a day in the life, and at the end resolves that. And along that journey, we'll look at the patient and the the mental health challenges that a patient might have that are associated with that disease as well. And we can see, well, maybe we can bring in some other mental health initiatives within this. For example, teach them mindfulness within this kind of just a short 5-minute piece, introduce the concept of mindfulness to them, again, to reduce their stress and help them manage their stress. So that became a template. And because we had that, we started applying it to other disease areas. And that ultimately is what led us to form VStream Health. So that's 10 years in, I don't know, 7 minutes. But that's how we got to the beginning of VStream Health.
Well, Noel, thank you, because it's fascinating. I mean, you've taken us on a journey from subterranean lairs building Formula One cars, lake-cooled with perfectionists, of course, through to how that brought you into VStream Health and this important... I mean, it's fascinating when you talk about how learning in a VR environment, how differently we sort of retain and engage with that information and that content. And that's going to be very interesting to our international audience. You know, we have lots of global brands watching this show. We have lots of people involved in international language and content, whether it's audio, the written word, or video. And it is fascinating to hear what you're doing in the healthcare space. So thank you for taking us on that little bit of context. But let's talk a little bit about VStream Health now in a bit more detail, if we can, because what you're doing there, it's truly remarkable. So you talked about XR and you talked about, you know, we obviously got virtual reality and we've got augmented reality, and you're working in these sort of XR platforms on these digital therapy techniques, but you're conveying information, you're conveying content. And there's an awful lot of scientific and medical information being conveyed there, particularly through the patient's eyes. Now, when it comes to I'm going to use the term medical animations or these VR, AR, MR experiences, there's an awful lot of technology behind the scenes here. So what's involved at VStream Health in order to be able to do this, to take all this content that these medical organizations, you know, these sort of world leading companies that have all this information, because you have to sort of almost package that up, don't you? And be able to share that with both patients and medical professionals around the world. So how does that actually work in practice at VStream Health?
Well, I mentioned that at the beginning, that concept of design thinking. So that's at a very broad level. That's an approach that we always take to any project that we're involved with. The first step of design thinking is empathy. So empathy means that you have to understand the challenge from, let's say, the end user's point of view. And so within health, we think about the patient, right? Even if we're thinking about the healthcare professional, ultimately, it's still about what's the best outcome for a patient. And so the first beginning of that process, you know, is if it's a particular disease area, for example, is understanding that disease area, doing as much research as we can to understand that disease area and understand the burden that a patient might have, understand, you know, the science behind a particular drug that we might be, you know, that we might be not promoting per se, but that is, let's say, funding the project. And so that's we work with our own internal teams, and then we also work with medical teams within our partner companies as well. And sometimes we work with our agencies. There might be medical specific agencies that we'll work with as well. So all of that is about making sure that, first of all, we have a clear understanding of what the challenge is, what the burden is for the patient's point of view, and making sure that the solution that we're then going to come up with is very clearly referenced. So everything that when we write, we'll simply write down an approach to the solution, first of all. Within that approach, everything that we base our solution on has to be medically referenced. So that's very important. It has to be, it's a very rigorous process from that point of view. We then move into visualizing that. So we move from the written document where we're presenting the concept of a solution, so to speak, or an approach, and we start visualizing that. Now, within that, we might think about what technology might be most appropriate in this instance. But we have, you know, medical writers, directors, 3D modelers, software developers, who are adept at basically learning about a new area and also understanding each other's area. So our 3D modelers have to understand, and our software developers have to understand each other's work, right? Because ultimately we do a lot in three dimensions, right? We build things in three dimensions. And no matter what the approach is, a lot of the time we will build assets, three-dimensional assets. And the great thing about three-dimensional assets is that they can be used on multiple platforms. They're an investment. You invest in that and you can use them in lots of different areas. So they're great from point of view of omni-channel marketing, for example. You invest in that 3D asset, you can then use that across multiple areas. But depending on the technology you're using, there can be challenges with that. So for example, if you're using a headset, well then you want to make sure that, and you expect for the 3D object to be moved in real time. So that means instead of being a pre-rendered video, that the object is actually like a computer game moving in real time, then you need to make sure that the 3D object that you build doesn't have too many parts inside it. Because if it does, then the processor has to move every single one of those little parts, right? So instead in how you technically approach building your assets, you have to think about that as well. So it can be moved across, used across lots of different platforms, but you do have to design it to be functional across all those platforms in the most kind of effective way, you know. So they're all different things that we will think of, we'll always have in the back of our minds from a technical and production point of view as we move through the design thinking process, as we move from empathy, and then we move from that into proposing a solution. And in proposing that solution, we then move into building that solution. So building something that we're going to now use and try. That's the kind of process. Now, a lot of the time, we might be introducing something quite new as well, a new type of technology or trying to do something new. So, for example, we've created the first meta patient in virtual reality. So a meta patient is a meta human, which is a platform that's built by Unreal Engine. Whereby we can create a very realistic looking avatar. So if you go on YouTube and look up Unreal Engine metahumans, you'll see a video there that will show you somebody speaking, saying, "I'm a metahuman." And when you haven't seen it for the first time, you'll think it's a real person. It looks like a real person. So it's an incredibly realistic, complex avatar that you can use in real time and pre-rendered. The reason that's important is because it allows us, especially in a very highly regulated environment as healthcare can be, it allows us to show a patient. And for example, if it's a patient with a skin disease, we can show that patient and the skin disease on that patient without having to show a real patient. But we can bring that meta patient into lots of different spaces, but also we can have lots of different ethnicities of that meta patient. So that's good, again, for a number of reasons. It's good because if it's something like a skin disease, well, that skin disease might impact different types of different ethnicities and different skin types differently. So we get to show that. But then from a localization point of view, obviously, it means that we can have create a piece of content, but change the character within that content for different territories around the world. We can localize it from that point of view. We can also change the language that character is speaking relatively in a more straightforward way as well. So it's an incredibly powerful tool that we're now using, for example. But that, again, from a process point of view, that means our guys then have to learn how to use that, how to rig that. And then we have to go, right, now how do we push this into a new space? How do we develop something new for this platform that will really help our brands connect in a way with their HCPs, for example, that really stands out, that's meaningful, but also that represents the patient in a way that the patient feels is legitimate and is representing their voice in a true a form as possible, while being able to still work within that tight regulatory environment. So that's the kind of, I suppose, the kind of work that we're doing now from a services point of view. A lot of that is now back in virtual reality. But again, if you create that asset, you can then take that asset and trigger it with a phone, so it becomes augmented reality. So you could have packaging, for example, hold the phone up, the phone will trigger an augmented reality experience, but you've taken the assets that you've created, the assets or the metahumans you've already built for a virtual reality experience, and now they're being used in an augmented reality experience. Or they're simply being used in video, or they're simply being used in print. Because once you've created the asset, you can use it across all these different platforms. So that's a bit of a roundabout way of saying kind of, you know, what's under the hood currently, you know?
Yeah, it's incredible, Niall, because you touched on a couple of things there, which are really, really important for our audience in particular. And that's that cultural resonance that you're creating through these meta people, through that digital asset, through that content. And thank you for taking us through the process of how you work through that with, say, a life sciences, healthcare, global provider. Because, again, you're coming at it from the patient's perspective, but everything from skin tone to language to culture to that localization of that 3D asset or that avatar or that meta human, whatever terminology you want to use, you're having to really think about the localization aspects of that content, the culture, the tone, the voice, the language, how that content is conveyed through this, you know, asset that you're building in this new technology. And I think that's really, really fascinating. So thank you for sharing that. One of the things I wanted to ask you, though, while we're on this sort of subject, because we're getting quite technical here and there's lots of terms we're throwing out there. You know, we're talking about XR and VR and AR and Unreal Engine and the capabilities of that behind the scenes, for example. But as the chief executive of VStream Health, I know that you are a big proponent that the story is bigger than the technology. And I know that you talk about that if you can create this unforgettable experience, you know, if you can sort of build that narrative that captivates an audience, then you choose the right hardware, software to help you tell that story. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about the importance of storytelling, both brand storytelling from the healthcare provider's perspective, but also storytelling from the end user, you know, the patient care perspective. Because I know we can talk quite detailed about the technology and you guys are, you know, world leading in this area, but it comes down to storytelling, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And I suppose that's my background. You know, as I say, I started in the ancient arts. I started studying theatre. You know, I still apply what I learned there today. You know, in all the new technologies that we work with, ultimately, they're just storytelling platforms. And we need to, there can be ways of engaging people in new ways and different ways. But ultimately, you know, there's a couple of ways of looking at it. You know, look, if you're creating a video or a film, you know, if it doesn't work on a small black and white TV, then the core idea is no good. The story itself is no good in the first place. Or I always remember when I used to work in music, you know, and I was in bands and they'd say, well, look, you know, if you can't play that song, if that song doesn't sound good on an acoustic guitar before you even go into the studio and add all the layers of technology, then it's not a good song. And if it's not a good song, you don't have anything at the core of what you're doing. And so everything has to be around story. Storytelling is essential. It's essential because at the heart of your kind of classical storytelling is going to be a protagonist. So if you say we create human-centric experiences, ultimately that means that human is the protagonist in a story. And when it comes to a patient, the patient is our protagonist and their story is their life. And so for us to be able to communicate with them or communicate about them, we have to make sure that we're telling a story that has empathy. We're telling a story that is going to connect with people on an emotional level. Because when you talk about trying to connect with a HCP, for example, healthcare professionals are incredibly busy, right? And they have to see so many different patients. They just don't have time quite often. They just don't have the capacity Or, you know, you can get jaded over a period of time, but to really connect with the patient and the patient's story. So most of the time you might have 15 minutes. We come in, I need to diagnose you, or I need to see where you are in your pathway. I need to then analyze that. I need to decide what's the next stage for you. I'm just thinking about the facts and the figures. I'm thinking about the data. I'm thinking about it solely from that medical point of view. So I don't really have time necessarily to build this empathetic relationship with the patient that I might like or that the patient might need. And yet this is not a nice to have. This is an essential, because we know that empathetic relationships lead to better patient outcomes. So all the work that you're doing in prescribing pharmacological solution, for example, and examining, you know, where they are in their care pathway, you know, is only going to be helped or possibly hindered if you can't also focus on the patient in a wider context. And if you can't really build that trust, and if you can't really build that empathy. Now, look, there are challenges with that, because that doesn't change. The times don't change. But if we can create content that helps a HCP reconnect on an emotional level with patients, well, then maybe it gives them, you know, a little bit of extra time. They'll give a little bit of extra time or a little bit of time out of that 15 minutes to genuinely go, let me try and connect with this person. It doesn't have to take long, but it does mean that you're in the moment. I'm in the moment right now with this patient just for this minute and going, how are you doing? And trying to remember that. It might just, you know, encourage them to do that, remind them of how important that is to do that. And so story, protagonist, and creating that empathy is essential at the heart of all of the content that we have to create. And the technology is there really to go, okay, it's a very noisy environment. Can we use technology to cut through? Or, you know, we want to have a new platform that allows us to deliver, to show a different, to show a, tell a story in, with a new perspective. Because a lot of time, you know, protagonists can, we might see protagonists in a more in more objective view. So how do we tell, you know, again, really tell the story from the patient's point of view in a way that can be shared by a HCP? So story right at the core of everything we do. When we talk about that design thinking piece and we have empathy at the beginning, very first stage, that's the bit that the story is built from. After that, technology and all that is how we tell the story. And that's another stage, but it comes after we've already developed the story itself.
Yeah, thank you, because that's such an important part, both patient side and from the HCP, that healthcare professional side of things. It's the bridge, isn't it? That storytelling. It's the thing that really resonates with people. It helps them to retain that information. And yeah. Earlier you were talking about, you know, it starts with kind of like a document, and from there you build out this story arc, I suppose. And some of your background is coming into that. You know, so
it starts with the word. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Starts with the written word. That's great. Another thing I wanted to ask you is about thought leadership, because, you know, I'm a big supporter of thought leadership around the world. We have something called the Think Global Forum, where we have these sort of conferences and boardroom discussions with some of the, you know, sharp minds from various industries, and life sciences is one of those areas. But you also launched something called PharmaComs TV. And I know you've had people on that sort of thought leadership series from people like Siemens Healthcare or Novartis or Pfizer or Roche, or, you know, lots of these sort of big healthcare brands that people would know. So what was the thinking behind PharmaComs TV, and what kind of discussions are you having there?
Well, you know, it was a way, I suppose it was a way for us to engage with the industry, for us to understand what the challenges are, were with the industry, to get a sense of where their heads are at. What's, you know, what are they thinking about, you know, about, you know, how we communicate with patients. And it's always really interesting. You know, we talked about, you know, for example, you know, the metahuman and different ethnicities being represented there. And I remember a conversation I had where we were talking about diversity and the importance of diversity and the importance of diversity within clinical trials. And, you know, what really resonated with me out of that was you know, quite often it's like wellness, you know, diversity, you know, it's it can be seen as a nice style. It's important, but it's important because of the in theory we buy into the importance of having a diverse workplace environment. How do we ensure that that's there's fair and equal access? And of course, that's an incredibly important element. But a bit like wellness, you know, every company will say, well, you know, wellness is really important. But how much they actually invest in wellness or encouraging diversity can often be down to, well, what impacts the bottom line? So, you know, with wellness, if you can go, well, look, you know, if you look after your employees' wellness, it's going to reduce absenteeism. It's going to reduce presenteeism. It's going to reduce attrition. And all of these things you can hit your bottom line. If you look at diversity, especially in clinical trials, and again, this came out of PharmComms TV, one of the conversations I had, you know, what you see is actually a lot of the clinical trials are not, well, certainly up until more recently, were not done with diverse populations, right? It just hadn't been thought about. And so when you got outputs from clinical trials, what you were seeing was a truth that was only relating to one part of the population. You know, and so, for example, with atopic dermatitis, for example, and skin disease, we know that it affects different types of skin differently, different ethnicities and different skins differently. But the research has to show that. So you have to have more diversity in how you're running clinical trials, because because literally different, it's different for different ethnicities, different for different people. So diversity is essential if you're trying to get to a truth about what you're doing. It's not a nice to have. It's an essential. And so likewise, you know, in what we're doing, it's not just because it's, you know, you're obviously, if you're going into a local market, if you're going into China with a, you know, if you're going into a Chinese market and you don't have an Asian person or a Chinese person, or asset within what you're creating, at a very minimum, you don't have something that somebody's necessarily, the Chinese people in China are going to empathize with, for example. Okay, fair enough. That's kind of an obvious thing. Likewise, you need cultural sensitivity. You know, you need to be aware from a cultural point of view in the content that you're creating, in the words that you're saying and how you're presenting things, because things can be perceived differently. And that's obviously important. People think about that. People think about that when they're localizing content. But actually, it's more than that, because the actual disease impacts people differently. So if you were talking about, even if you have an Asian person in an Asian country, but you're talking about how the disease impacts a person from a different ethnicity, well, then there's obviously a disconnect, because the experience of the patient that you're talking about is not the same as the experience as their experience. The experience you're representing is not the experience of the people that you're communicating to. So that's the sort of thing that comes out of PharmaComms TV. That's the sort of thought leadership that we learn from the conversations we have with people in Novartis. That was somebody in Novartis, for example. And that then informs our design approach. It informs how we engage with our process and engage with our clients. And we're able to take something like that we've learned from one person in one organization, and we can bring it into our discussions with another organization. And so that helps pollinate and share the importance of these ideas, and that helps share those thought leadership ideas. So that's why it's been it's been a really useful and educational platform for us. And then obviously it allows us to connect in a very noisy environment, connect with our potential clients as well. You know, so it's a way to open up conversations as well. You know.
Yeah, I love that. And it really is this sort of thought-provoking communication within the healthcare sector. And it really does make you think about the importance of what you're discussing there. Because when it comes to innovation is one thing, but you've got to communicate with your audience. And it has to feel like you're talking to me. I mean, ultimately, that's the bit that we're talking about, through localization, through ethnicity, through diversity. And I think that, you know, companies are getting better at this, but there's still a huge gap. Mm-hmm. And particularly when you talked earlier about how by doing these things and bridging this gap, it actually helps patient care, because mm-hmm. it helps you understand better. It helps you be less stressed. It helps you potentially recover better mm-hmm. because you understand it more and it means mm-hmm. more to you. because it's in your world, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's such an important piece of work that you're doing. So thank you for sharing that, Noel. Now, look, before we wrap up, I want to geek out a little bit again. And I want to talk a lot about some of the changes that are coming down the road. And my questions are twofold. One is, at the time of recording this, and for people watching this after the sort of time that we're recording it, Apple, huge, you know, one of the biggest successful companies on the planet, launch Vision Pro, this new headset, you know, this virtual reality, or sorry, augmented reality headset. This obviously has implications for healthcare. I know you're very, I mean, look, you guys are really involved in this AR, VR world. We've, you know, it's not a new idea. The concept of wearing a headset isn't new. There's many companies with many solutions in this space. But I wanted to ask you that question at the time of this new Apple Vision Pro being launched about the next sort of year, 2 years, 3 years. What's on the roadmap? What are you thinking about from a VStream Health perspective? Because whether it's Unreal Engine, whether it's the whole XR space, or whether it's the development and the sort of investment that healthcare companies are putting into this space, it is changing lightningly fast. It is rapidly changing. What are you thinking about as a CEO of a company heavily involved in the life sciences and healthcare sector, Noel?
So we launched a platform called Shine VR, and Shine VR is focused on the workplace environment and is designed to help people reduce stress and increase wellness. And we did a number of pilots there, and they're hugely successful. So with the pilots, we use psychometric testing to evaluate in a multi-baseline approach. But ultimately, when people use their platform, it reduces their stress trended downwards. 68% of people's stress trended downwards after using the platform. 58% trended upwards for wellness. There are a lot of people who are negative about their jobs that reverse that negative trend. So the platform is based on using cognitive behavioral therapy techniques to help people to reduce their stress and increase their wellness. Now, ultimately, what that means, you mentioned the word worlds, right? What this means is, when you put on a headset, you're in an immersive world, an immersive environment. And this is what we have at the moment. Within that immersive environment, then we can change your behavior. Certain activities within those environments can change your behavior with your participation. We're taking techniques that are already proven. So cognitive behavioral therapy already works. It's proven to work, and for in many different areas. When you bring that into an immersive environment, it's also proven to work even more effectively. You get even better results. Okay, so we're already kind of rolling this out on a kind of a per user per month basis for employees. But there's a kind of a human performance curve, and the idea is that if you're in the center of that curve, that's kind of optimal. If you're before that curve, you're demotivated. And if you're after that curve, you're overstressed and you're heading towards ill health and burnout. Okay. So our platform is designed to keep you in the center. However, we're now looking at, because we've seen how effective our platform is, and we've seen some other movement in the market with a company called Applied VR, who've released FDA approval in the States for their platform, for their product called Reliever, to be used to reduce chronic pain. And we saw this and realized, actually, we can look at an area like this as well. And so what we're going to do is we're now turning our wellness platform into a digital therapeutic. That's what we're going to do over the next 3 years. We're going to bring in AI, artificial intelligence, to create generative VR. And what that means is the more you use the headset and the different environments that, and when we see that certain environments and certain activities show greater efficacy in reducing your stress and increasing your wellness, the AI learns from this and then it changes what those environments will look like. So for example, if you're in a forest with a river and you're doing diaphragmatic breathing to reduce your stress, well, the AI will learn that actually, when there's more sky and less trees in a bigger river, you respond better. It reduces your stress more. So it'll start changing the environments specifically for you to increase the efficacy of the platform, to either reduce your stress, increase your wellness, or to reduce your perception of chronic pain, or to help you with depression or help you with anxiety. So we're now moving into really thinking about the patient from that kind of the work that we did from an educational point of view for pharma companies into going, well, actually, how do we bring that even further? How do we develop that patient-centric virtual reality experience in a way that can actually have an even greater impact and reduce chronic pain, reduce stress, help with depression, help with anxiety? And so that's where we're going. So when you talk about Apple, the reason that headset is so important is because a lot of the time people are concerned about the headset as a barrier to entry, right? Whereas once Apple move into the consumer market and they say, we're plugging our whole ecosystem into this and you don't need controllers anymore. You just put the headset on and you can control things with your hands. That means that the sort of worlds that we're creating where you can access cognitive behavioral therapy to reduce your perception of chronic pain, now that's going to be even more accessible because you have a large consumer tech company like Apple saying, we're putting it out in the market. Now, it's expensive. You can access, Meta's one for €500. This one's 3,500. But there's a lot of reason why it's a much higher quality product. What it also allows us to do is eye tracking. And the Apple one isn't the first one to do this, but it allows us to take in biometrics as well. So eye tracking, a galvanic skin response. So if you're physically stressed, you have a galvanic skin response and you can measure that. So you can measure that level of stress and allows us to pull all that biometric data into the platform, again, using AI to make all of these digital therapeutic solutions even more effective and more impactful. So the next few years, nobody talks about the metaverse anymore at the moment. We went from the peak to the trough of disillusionment. Everyone's gone. Nobody's going to go near Bitcoin ever again. All these new things that came out, they always have the peak and the trough of disillusionment. Then we come back up into the practicality of how we do it. But Apple's headset really is another really important step in this idea of the metaverse or Web 3.0 or anything like that. The next generation of how we will all engage with each other. In a kind of a communicative way, and how we leverage all this technology in a way that can genuinely transform healthcare and where it can be personalized and can be owned, and where the communication of all of that, it becomes part of a more integrated approach. That communication isn't just about me sending a message to you so you buy my product, but is in fact about me as a company thinking about you as a patient in a much more holistic way. And that recognizing that the power of my communication can actually not just get you to buy something, but actually can get you to can have a better patient outcome for you because I'm educating you as well as convincing you that my pharmacological solution, for example, is the best solution. It can improve the outcome of that pharmacological solution because it reduces stress. It can improve things for you as well. So it gets us to revolutionize how we think about how we communicate and how important those stories ultimately are.
Yeah, that's incredible. You've given us a lot to think about there. Yeah. One of the things that really stuck with me was the use of artificial intelligence in healthcare, because it's a big topic. It's the hottest topic on the planet right now. And healthcare companies around the world are really looking into how AI enables what they do. But just talking about generative AI from this content that you've created, this world that you've created for patients and patient care, and how the generative AI will help it to learn what works better for you as an individual, and bringing that personalization back into that storytelling. And of course, there'll be audio, there'll be video, there'll be, text on screen, etc. And all that has to be localized. All that has to be culturally relevant to the audience and to the individual ultimately wearing it. And it's that real, not just the personalization of the content from the written word, the audio, the video perspective, but it's also the personalization from how it makes you react. Mm-hmm. What it does for you, what the patient outcome is, and using these sort of, as you say, very advanced sensors that we have now, and the compute power that we can put to these type of solutions. It's a very exciting time for the healthcare environment. So thank you for sharing that now, because it's it's truly fascinating. And I, you know, I look forward to where we're going to be in a short number of years, because it just sounds so incredible as to what we can do now.
Absolutely. And you know what, it's the kind of the vision of that future is very tangible. It's really just about doing it, and that's what we're doing over the next 3 years, is doing it, is building these things out, testing them, iterating until we get it right. But it's not conceptual. It's here, it is here. And now it's about, how we actually build it in an ethical way. When you talk about AI and how AI can be used, how AI and data can be used for patients, I think it's really important two things. One is that we start looking at how the patient or the person, the individual, can actually own their own data, right? I think that's really important, that you own your data. It can be encrypted in such a way that it's like a key. It's my data. I can plug it in, access a service, and plug it out again. And that isn't just something that's taken and sold to everybody to flog, a new pair of jeans to me, but actually it's something that I can take back. That's really important. But also the use of AI and how AI uses that data, again, shouldn't be something that is outside to manipulate us, but as something that we own, and we use AI as a tool to help change our behavior or to help support the journeys that we might be on in healthcare, and that we as individuals own our data and we're in control of how AI helps us as a tool, rather than being manipulated by outside forces and not owning your own data. So I think that's a really important, and the healthcare industry has an opportunity as it moves into this area to start approaching it in an ethical way, such that everyone benefits. Everyone benefits, and we can do that now, and we should be having those discussions now as we move into this new view, this new view of the world. And now's the time to have discussions, learn from all the mistakes we made in the past. So hopefully all those in these large companies who are in charge of digital transformation or metaverse or anything like that, whatever your title is, make sure you're leading the way in from an ethical point of view and talking about ethics at the top of all of this, as well as the power that these technologies have. Talk about the ethics.
Couldn't agree more. Fantastic. So now, look, before we wrap up, is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you maybe want to share with us about the VStream universe or any other area that you're involved in? And secondly, and really importantly, if people want to reach out and find out more about the great work you're doing as the Chief Executive Officer of VStream Health, where's the best place to send people to?
Well, look, people are more than welcome to link in with me anyway. You'll find me on LinkedIn. But vstream.ie is kind of the group website, and you can access the other companies from there. I can be contacted. Once you go through that website, I'll get all those emails, and contact us through email or phone or LinkedIn, any of those platforms. Always delighted to hear from people that are interested. At the moment, we're trying to open conversations up with people about Shine VR and getting them to learn more about that platform and how that can help companies. As I say, we've run lots of pilots for companies as well. If they need if there's a champion within a company that wants to push something like this forward, but it's a bit too innovative initially, then sometimes running pilots can help them sell that in as well. So delighted to hear from anyone who's interested in either Shine VR or, of course, any of the other stuff that we do, any of the other services that we do from the point of view of creating human-centric or patient-centric experiences. Delighted to hear from anybody.
Yeah, perfect. And I know you're in New York and you're in London, and of course you're in Dublin, Ireland. So if there are healthcare organizations or experts out there that want to get in touch with Niall, check out vstreamhealth.com or vstream.ie for the group site, where all the information is to all your other elements and organizations. But look, it's been a pleasure, Niall, and thank you so much indeed for taking some time out to join me here on Vista Talks. We love having conversations with interesting people from all around the world. That's what we do here at Vista Talks, and what you're doing in the world of healthcare with VStream Health as the CEO, it's truly groundbreaking. You're really leading the way And I wish you continued success. So thanks so much indeed, Niall, for spending some time with me today. And that brings us nicely to the end of this episode of Vista Talks. So thanks to people who have been listening or watching to this episode around the world. Thanks to Niall O'Driscoll and all the great work he's doing at VStream. And I hope people will come back and join us for some more interesting discussions with interesting people from all around the world. But thank you, Niall. It's been a real pleasure and an education to catch up with you today.
Absolute pleasure, Simon. Thanks for having me on the platform. Appreciate it.